Thanks for that, Catherine. Now, on the show, we're going to have Tommy Doolihan. He has grown his dreadlocks for 20 years, but now he's going to shave them off for charity. And on the line now, we have Tommy Doolihan. Tommy, good morning. Thanks for joining us in the show.
Confusion that I'm the man's father that's doing the head shave.
Oh, you're Tommy's father, sorry.
Sam. No, Ian Doolihan is
the... Oh, Ian's doing it, and you're his father, Tommy. Sorry, a bit of a mix-up there.
Sorry about that. He's doing the head shave, and he's been growing his dreadlocks since he was in his late teens.
Now, I see a picture of him here. They're pretty long, 20 years.
Yeah, and he never had any idea at any time he would shave them off until he saw the trust for Grace Harper, which would be his sister-in-law's niece. And he said he would take them off to raise funds for Grace.
Yeah, so it obviously means a lot to Ian to do this.
It does. And it makes me very proud of him as well. And he would be a popular figure, probably around Letterkenny. A lot of people would know him because of the red dreadlocks. They actually go right down nearly to the back of his knees.
Yeah, so he would stand out anyway, anybody who knows him.
He would stand out, and I must apologise that he wasn't available to go on air this morning. He asked me what to do it instead because he had to go away.
And has he had any reservations about doing this? I'd say he had to put a lot of thought into doing this.
He probably had to put a lot of thought into it, like, you know, but once he saw what it was for, he went ahead to do it because it, I think you may have Stephen on there as well there, Grace's father, that we would know the family a long time. There's been a connection.
And how long has Ian and Stephen been friends?
Well, Ian and Stephen would have first met at my son's, about 7 years ago, at my son's wedding in Zakynthos, in Greece. And at that time, Grace wasn't long over her illness, and she was more or less given up that she would never walk again, as Stephen will tell you.
Yeah, and we have Stephen on the line now. Stephen, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Morning, Barry.
What does it mean to you, Stephen, the fact that Ian's doing this?
It's amazing. It really is fantastic support. With Grace's Trust, we have that established now for the last 2 years, and our family and friends have been just really fantastic with everything that they've done to help raise funds.
And we're talking a lot about Ian Doogie's hair here, but just tell us about your daughter, Grace.
Yeah, Grace is our youngest daughter. She's 11 at the minute. When she was one, she had she got viral meningitis, and she was very unwell and basically lost all her speech and movement. And she recovered from that, and but she has a physical disability. She's a wheelchair user, but she can walk short distances in her walking frame. And over the last few years, or since she was sick, we've been linked with the CRC in Clontarf, where she gets all her therapies, her physiotherapy and speech therapy and OT. And just over the last few years, then we really wanted to kind of step up the kind of work with Grace, and that's where the trust fund has come in.
And how much does this trust fund mean? How much does the likes of what Ian's doing for charity, how much does things like that mean?
It means an awful lot to Susan and myself and the family. It's a huge, huge support. And none of the work that we've done over the last couple of years with Grace, the additional work that we've done, would have been possible without it. Last year, we went over to a specialist clinic in the UK, the Brainwave Trust in Bristol, and they provide us with an intensive physio program based on Grace's needs. And we've been back to them a second time now, and we will go back every 6 months to review the program. And it's been hugely encouraging what the changes that they've seen in Grace in that time. She's walking for longer periods. She's stronger. She's able to do more, and it's just, it'll be great for Grace in the long term, because the more she can, you know, not be in her wheelchair, the better for her health it'll be.
And if enough funds are raised, then it will be hoped that Grace will be able to walk eventually unassisted.
Well, that's the goal. That's the long-term goal. And as I say, none of that would be possible. That additional piece of work that we're doing with Grace wouldn't be possible without the work of all the family and friends and the sort of things that Ian is doing.
And Ian's dad, Tommy's on the line too. Tommy, when is the head shave taking place?
It's taking place on the 2nd of August in the Bursa Bar in Baldefey.
And how, if anybody wants to donate, how can they?
You can go online and donate at Head Shave for Grace Harper Trust by Ian E. Dullahan, or even Dougie Head Shave is googled, it'll come up. Facebook, Ian E. Dullahan Head Shave or Dougie Dullahan Head Shave, and you can donate online. And also from yesterday there are sponsor cards available which will be distributed locally.
Yeah, so hopefully a lot of people will donate to this. Stephen, is there any other charity events for the Trust going on as well?
Well, there, my mother just had organised a pub quiz in Letterkenny that happened on Thursday night. Last year, I ran a couple of marathons. I ran the Donegal Marathon and the Dublin Marathon and raised sponsorship through that. And here in Dublin, our friends organised a night out that raised money and a table quiz as well. So, you know, it's been a huge effort by everybody, friends and family. And, you know, we are really, really appreciative. And, you know, it makes such a difference to the work that we're doing with Grace.
And hopefully loads of people will donate now when Dougie takes off these dreadlocks. 20 years old, 20 years he's been growing them.
Yeah, it's a huge deal for Dougie, and fair play to him.
Yeah, and how much are you looking to get through the charity here, or is it just as much as you can, really?
Just raising as much as we can. We don't have any kind of end point. I mean, we're kind of planning for Grace's, you know, for interventions with Grace on into her teenage years, you know, and while she's making gains and improving. We want to just keep pushing on and doing as much as we can. So,
well, Stephen and Tommy, anybody who wants to donate, we'll put the details up on our social media pages. And as Tommy was saying, it will be the Bursa Bar in Balbuffet on Sunday, August 2nd, in aid of the Grace Harper Trust. He's going to be shaving off the dreadlocks which he's been growing for 20 years. Guys, thanks for joining us in the show.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Just, Barry, before you go, there's www.gofundme.com/DougieHeadShave.
Okay, Tommy, we'll put that up on our Facebook page as well.
All right, thank you very much.
Thanks for joining us.
Right, Barry, bye bye now. Yeah.
Blur Lonesome Street there. Before we take on our next guest, I'll read out the competition again. On this week's show, courtesy of our Errigal Arts Festival, we're giving you the chance to win a family room overnight stay on the 22nd of July in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny, and also four tickets to the Elves and the Shoemaker on the 22nd of July in the Angraenan Theatre in Letterkenny. To be in with the chance of winning this fantastic prize, simply answer this question. In the fairy tale Cinderella, how many ugly sisters did she have? A, 2 or B, 4? Text HI plus your answer, name and address to 53131. That's 53131. Or from the north to 84555. Now, our next guest on the show is Alex Fegan from Eton Films. Did anybody watch the documentary on RTE1 on Monday night called The Pub? Well, Alex is the man who made it. Alex, first of all, I watched it. What kind of reaction did it get?
Hello, Barry. How are you? Thanks for having me on. Yeah, got a very good reaction. We were delighted with it. People seemed to really take to us. The film itself was played in cinemas about 2 years ago, and it got a good reaction then as well, and we kind of took it around the world for the last 2 years. So this was the first time it played in RTE, so it was great to see a good response.
Oh right, so it was in the cinema 2 years ago, and it's what I took from it was it's just so Irish. It was really just so Irish, and. You were really where you were everywhere. You were in Kerry, you were in Limerick, you were in Galway, you were in Roscommon, you were here in Donegal, you were in Cavan, you were in County Down. You really were everywhere in the country.
Yeah, so the idea was we go around to pubs that were in the same family for at least three generations, and we just hold a mirror up to those pubs and just let the public speak for themselves as to what the pub means to them, and then just see what happens. And so that was kind of how it came about. And obviously, when we started, we had no idea we were going to get such interesting stories and meet so many interesting characters. But I suppose that's an HVAC business. They're talking to people all day long, so we couldn't have found better subjects for the film.
Yeah, and that's it. And did you set out to never have a narrator to the documentary? Was that purposely done?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I think once you introduce a narrator or that type of, or a presenter, what can happen is this film can become about them and their take on it, as opposed to about the publicans and the audience's take on it. So that's what we tried to do, was trying to just let the audience decide for themselves whether this is an institution that is worth preserving, that is an important part of our culture. And so we didn't want to be putting our own sort of voice on that.
And is the Irish pub dying out? Pubs with no televisions, where it's just conversation, pubs with shops and funeral homes beside them. Is that dying out in Ireland?
It's hard to know. There are pubs all over Ireland still. There are sprinkles all over the country. We went around and we were, amazed by just how many pubs we were able to film. But not only that, but after the film was made, how many pubs people said we didn't film. So they're still very much all around the country, and it's the number one reason why foreign people come to Ireland. They people like to visit these pubs, and they like to get that sense of, where they can just relax and just take it handy. I suppose it's something that's changing because of just the nature of people going to off licenses, being able to drink at home and stuff like that. But I think that ultimately it's up to the people of Ireland to decide whether the pubs will die out. And I think they've got a good bit of life in them yet.
Yeah, but I suppose in some parts of rural Ireland too, you have the elder generation are becoming isolated because of the closure in some areas of the Irish pub in rural areas, and some of the older generation don't have that place to go to now, where it wasn't necessarily for a drink. It was a place to go and sit down and have a conversation with someone.
Absolutely, and that is definitely something that we saw, especially in the third, fourth generation pubs, is that the next generation, they just, they're well educated, they're going to college, and they just don't have the time or the resources to keep these pubs open. They're not as busy as what they were, because you have obviously the drinking ban, you've got the Supermarket Acts and whatnot. smoking bans. And these have affected the pubs, and slowly but surely some of the more isolated pubs have closed down. And then the farmers, as you said, or people who live in rural areas, they don't have that place to meet. And yeah. I suppose one thing we tried to do with the film was it's not about alcohol at all. It's about community, and it's about how people kind of interact with each other in Ireland traditionally. And that's where people went. They went to their local pub and they, you know, they had the chat and the crack, and they put all their worries to the side.
You had many of the pub owners describing their customers as friends and family. They were describing them as in the documentary.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I think that's very much a part of the culture that we're in. That we have, that people, you know, that they would chat to the owners as if they were some kind of counsellor,
yeah,
which was very interesting to us.
Yeah, and I suppose there were some great characters in this film. Anybody who stood out for you? I think the guy who stood out for me would have been Paul. Is it Paul Gartland was his name? He was in King's Court, the King's Court pub in County Cavan. He was telling a good story about the night they got chased out of the pub, and they had a few guys had a hide, and one guy had his hands around the rooster's neck to keep it quiet so it wouldn't be caught. So there were some great stories, but who would have stood out for you?
I suppose every pub had their unique selling point. Not to be diplomatic about this, but I think every pub, I think in Donegal there, you had Nana and Patricia, who were just incredible. They're just,
yeah.
You can just see just such so natural. And I think that was the thing that stood out for us, is like the publicans, they weren't pretending to be anything. They just were who they were, and they were completely at ease,
yeah,
with the camera and just telling the stories. So I think, like, all over Ireland, I think if there's one sort of commonality, it's that each of these pub owners just know who they are, and they're very they're sort of philosophical without the philosophy, if you like.
And you mentioned you were in Donegal, you're at Brennan's pub in Bundoran.
Yeah,
with the two women who own it, and I suppose they were saying their pub is traditional and they've no TVs, but they were saying they find lots of surfers coming in and they'll just sit down and they like the quiet. They have their conversation, talk about the day surfing they had, which I find really interesting.
Absolutely, and there was so many of the publicans said that television has been the death nail to the pub. I think, you know, they sort of brought them in the for the World Cups and whatnot, and then a lot of pubs left the TVs on regardless, and so you're sitting there trying to have a conversation and you've got Sky News in the background,
yeah,
or you've got Dart playing in the background. I think it destroys the atmosphere of the pub.
It's not even the TVs either. I'm sorry for interrupting you, Alex, but I remember reading recently you had a number of pubs which were banning mobile phones because people just come in, they sit and drink their pint, and they're just constantly on their phone.
They're constantly on their phone, or they're on a laptop or whatever, and it's deceiving that's not the point of it at all. It's about it's about telling stories and having the chat. And I think some of the more busy pubs now have kind of realised that. And the likes of Nan and Patricia's pub in Bundoran, you can really get a lovely sense of an atmosphere in there because people are actually talking.
Yeah. So, Alex, anybody who hasn't seen the documentary, well, it's on RTE Player. I think it'll be on there for another few days. But anybody, anywhere else, people can watch it?
I'm not sure now if there's any more screenings going around Ireland, but if you go onto our website, it's www.irishpubfilm.com. We have a sort of a list of future screenings that are taking place.
Yeah, and I'm sure.
So, and
a lot of
there
people
will be more screenings around.
Yeah, a lot of people who haven't seen it, I would say they should watch it. Some great stories. I really enjoyed it. Now it is a great film.
Thanks very much, Barry.
Alex,
really appreciate that.
Thanks for joining us in the show.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
All right, Alex. Thank you. That's Alex Fegan from Aiton Films there joining us on the show. That's the Irish Pub documentary. I watched it in RTE Player. Was it Thursday night I watched it? It's a really, really good documentary. Really good fun. And there's no narrator. He just goes round the pubs in the country. As I say, he was in Kerry, he was in Limerick, he was in Roscommon. He was in a number of pubs in Dublin. He was in County Down, he was in County Cavan. And as I say, they were in Nan and Patricia's pub, Brennan's in Bundoran. So there's loads of pubs that went round, but some great stories. It really is a great documentary. So as I say, it's still in the RTE Player for anybody who wants to watch it. So it is worth watching. So it's definitely worth watching. It's a great documentary. That was Alex. We're going to take another song and then we'll have another guest on.
Knowing the way life goes on there. Before we go to our next guest, Alan Henry, I'm going to read out a few requests. Maggie Ann Freeland, Kerry Keel, happy 90th birthday. That's from her daughter Mary and Jim and family. Also, my brother James Dugan and Debbie Boyle, who are getting married today. That's from Petra and family. Jenny Roper, Crossroads Killigarden, happy birthday. That's from Mum and Dad, Denise and Lindsay. Leanne McDade and Glenn Gallagher, who are getting married today. And happy birthday to Leanne, the bridesmaid and flower girls and godchild Madison. That's from the bridesmaids and flower girls and godchild Madison. Any other requests? Jody Gallagher, Castle Finn, happy 15th birthday from Mum and Dad and Brother Evan. And the Downing's under 14 girls playing in the county finals today. Best of luck, all their supporters. And also special granny and great granny, Margaret Ann Freeland, Kerry Keel. Another happy 90th birthday there. This is from Roisin, Martin, Darren, James, Gavin and Cara this time. And also my sister Catherine and Edward McGagan. Happy Pearl anniversary. That's from her sister Mags and Barney Lafferty in Glenealy. Now just our competition today again, we'll have a quick recap of that. On this week's show, courtesy of our Errigal Arts Festival, we're giving you the chance to win a family room overnight stay on the 22nd of July in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny. Excuse me. Something stuck in my throat there. And also four tickets to the Elves and the Shoemaker on the 22nd of July in the Anne Green in Letterkenny. To be in with the chance of winning this fantastic prize, simply answer the question. In the fairy tale Cinderella, how many ugly sisters did she have? A2 or B4? Text hi plus your answer, name and address to 53131 or from the north to 84555. Now on the show we have Alan Henry, who's joined us today to talk about the race around Ireland. Alan, thanks for joining us on the show. Good morning.
Perry, thanks a million.
Now, Alan, before we talk about the race around Ireland, I want to talk about this race across America you took part in, 5,000 kilometres across America. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we decided to put an 8-man team into what's considered to be the toughest bike race in the world. It's 3,000 miles of 5,000K going from Oceanside in California all the way to Annapolis. And it goes 24 hours a day, so it's non-stop. And as a team of 8 riders, you're actually relaying. So you might have a rider on the road for 30 minutes, which swaps over for another guy. And you're going 24 hours a day nonstop. So, yeah.
Did you have any time to sleep?
Yeah, well, we did for our 8-man squad. Now, there are guys who do this solo. The solo riders will stay on the bike for up to 22 hours a day in order to finish it. But as an 8-man team, we split into 2 teams of 4. So 4 people, one would be cycling at a time, one would drive, one would navigate, and one would rest. And we would swap them over for 12 hours. And then after 12 hours, we get to sleep for about 3 hours. And then we drive about 250 miles to catch up with the other 4 guys who have now, they've now been cycling for the last 12 hours. So it was pretty much non-stop, yeah.
And Alan, was everybody okay doing this? Because I know in certain parts of America, the temperatures can get really, really high.
Yeah, this year particularly was really bad coming through. The Mojave Desert at the start was over 50 degrees. We did have one guy who suffered with heat stroke on the first day. So it left us a little bit short of a guy for about a day and a half. But having said that, we had all this stuff planned before we go. We're also the first team ever in the history. The event has been going for 34 years. And always with a team, you would have a crew. So some 8-man teams might have anywhere between 10 and 20 crew of people who are driving and navigating and helping them in terms of food and doing all of those things. So the cyclists just have to cycle. But for the first time in history, we decided to do it with no crew whatsoever. So the 8 cyclists were actually our crew as well. We did it self-supported, which means that we drive, we navigate, we ride the bikes, we eat, we sleep, we do everything ourselves. So that made it a little bit tougher. So when we were one guy down, it just meant that the other 3 guys in the car had to do a little bit more just for the day and a half. But that's what it's all about.
How long did it take to complete the race across America?
Yeah, well, for us, the goal, to finish it, you need to be inside 9 days. The goal for us, first of all, because we were the first team ever to attempt it with no crew, was to finish it. The second was, there's a team from Yall who did it a couple of years ago, and they put in a time of 7.5 days, so 7 days, 14 hours. We managed to get it inside 7 days. We did it in 6 days and 16 hours and 4 minutes, to be precise. So, yeah, it was a pretty good time. We were delighted with it.
Yeah, I was trying to work it out. Like, that's pretty quick, 9 days going across America. It's some going.
Yeah, to do it in less than 7, we really did have to push it, you know. But again, we had good, strong guys. We had a lot of guys who I would have picked from experience point of view. guys would have done race around Ireland before, for example. We took guys from that. So the lads on the team, you had Colin Baldwin, Tomás Scully, and PJ Nolan, who was actually president of Cycling Ireland at one point. You had Pat Ducey, Michael Mills, Blair Clinton, and a guy from Yall who had done it before, Brian Hare. So having him on the team as well, able to come in and say, look, lads, this is what we're actually going to face over there, you know. And I've been over there 3 times with other teams.
But right, oh, you...
Say, it was the, yeah.
So many, how many times have you done it?
It's my 4th time there, 1st time cycling.
Right.
So I was crew with a 4-man team, and then I was crew chief with the first Irishman ever to finish it, Donnacha Cutras.
Would you cycle it again?
Yeah, I'd love to do it as a team. I mean, there's nothing like cycling an event like this as part of a team. It's just pure acceleration. It's class. As a solo rider, not a chance. It's not something I would ever do. My God, no. These guys really put themselves through a lot of work.
Guys do it as solo riders across America?
Yeah, they do. Yeah, the first Irishman to finish it, Donnacha Cutras, as I say, I was crew chief for him. He did it in less than 11 days.
Less than 11 days by himself, yeah. That's... And then supposing you take in the heat and the lack of sleep and stuff, it would really, really take its toll, wouldn't it?
That's exactly it. The fastest guy to do it, less than 8 days.
Unbelievable.
He also did our event, the Race Around Ireland, which is 2,200 kilometres non-stop. It's pretty much the exact same format as a World Cup. That guy did Race Around Ireland in less than 4 days, the 2,200K. He had 1 40-minute sleep and 3 20-minute sleeps for the entire duration of the event.
In 4 days, he had 1 20-minute and 2 30-minute?
One forty
and 2 20.
And 3 20-minute.
3 20, that's unbelievable. And tell us about the Race Around Ireland this year.
Yeah, the Race Around Ireland starts on the 30th of August. We're actually driving the route at the moment. We're in Donegal, we're passing through, so we're checking the route, making sure it's all right. Thanks to Europcar, they've given us a nice car to go around. Well, we're checking that this weekend. 2,200 kilometres, starts on the 30th of August. We have 4 teams, believe it or not, from Donegal. So you'll be able to watch them. If you go on racearoundireland.com, we have live tracking from the 30th of August as well. They'll be coming through on the Monday.
What parts of Donegal do they go through? Is it up around the coast or...?
Yeah, well, at the moment we're in Mallon. So they're going through Mallon Head, Ballyliffin, Memorial Gap, so they have to take in that, Buncrana, and then Lifford, and on then straight through.
Yeah, plenty of hills in those places as well.
Yeah, there's a couple of hills, all right. It's a little bit bumpy. The Race Around Ireland is known as one of the toughest endurance cycle events in the world as well. It's right up there with Race Across America. We're a World Cup event as well, and a European Championship this year for ultra distance.
So you're saying...
You're
saying there's 4 teams from Donegal. How many teams altogether would be in it?
We have 17 teams this year in it, and we have 18 solo riders from 13 different countries, including the likes of Brazil and Switzerland, the Netherlands, Monaco, Lithuania. So they're coming from all over to take part in this.
All over the world, yeah. And is there vantage points for crowds maybe to come out and watch this in Donegal?
I think the easiest thing to do is if you go onto the race website when it's on, the racearoundireland.com, we have it 24-hour tracking. And what we find is we're actually running a campaign this year to fuel the rider. Because a lot of our riders come back and go, do you know what? It was just somebody standing on the side of the road clapping me and, you know, wishing me luck. It drove me on for another 10 or 15 miles. So we're doing this thing of fuel the rider, follow your rider going around, come out, applaud them, call their name out, and you'd be surprised. You'll just give them a little bit more energy to go an extra few miles. So a lot of people go out to the likes of the top of Memorial Gap because they like to watch the guys coming over the really steep hills. Mallon Head is always a popular place for people to go as well to kind of see these guys hit the top of the country and then keep going. They also hit Mizzen Head, so they'll hit Mizzen Head a few days later and then they have to come back all the way. It starts in Trim in County Meath and it finishes in Navan in County Meath. So it literally is a full loop of the whole thing, you know.
So the 30th of August, that gets underway. I'm sure a lot of people will be looking forward to it. And 4 teams from Donegal, so people can come out and watch them. Alan, thanks for joining us on the show. I'm sure a lot of people will be looking forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be honest, we're delighted to be able to talk about the Generali Race Around Ireland team that did RAM as well, so we really appreciate that. And I'd love to hear people coming out onto the route and supporting the riders going around. And if you get any photographs, sure, put them up on our Facebook page. We've our Facebook page there as well. And let us know who you see and what's happening. So it's going to be a great
just
event.
What is the Facebook page for our listeners? And then we'll put it up on our Facebook page as well.
Brilliant. If you just go on Race Around Ireland.
Yeah, Race Around Ireland.
Check in Facebook, Race Around Ireland, and you'll find us on that.
Okay, Alan, that's great.
Follow all the news.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thanks a million, Barry. I appreciate that.
That's Alan Henry there from Race Around Ireland, as he says. 30th of August, four teams from Donegal in it this year. Only there's 17 teams taking part altogether, and four of them are from Donegal. He was saying the vantage points are around Malin Head, Mamore Gap. So that's going to be great to go out and watch that. We're going to take a short commercial break. Welcome back to the Weekend Edition. Before we go to our next guest, we'll read a few requests. Congrats and best wishes to Jamie and Kira on their wedding in Letterkenny today. That's from all the Patterson family in Kildare. Also, Lisa Duffy and Liam McDade, who are getting married today. That's from Uncle Charlie and Teresa. And just one of our callers has says, there are millions going to financial consultants and advisors. The everyday people are fighting to survive. If I had my way, politicians wouldn't get any holidays as they do nothing. But unfortunately, I don't make the rules. That's from one of our listeners coming in. That's their opinion. Of course, we're reading out the newspapers today. 10 weeks holidays politicians will get. Now, they were not back in the Dáil or the Shannon until the 22nd of September. Now on the show, we have journalist Tanya Sweeney. Tanya, good morning. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Good morning, Barry. How are you?
Now, you've had an article out in the past week or so about the ideal beach body. What is the ideal beach body?
Well, to my mind, the ideal beach body is one that gets you from your house to the beach in, you know, without too much inconvenience. So I don't really care too much for aesthetics or anything like that. But as long as you're healthy and as long as your body can do stuff and gets you places, well, then that should be the bodily ideal.
Does the media lead us to believe that the ideal beach body for a woman is skinny, flat stomach, and then the ideal body for a man is muscly, is it not?
Well, exactly, yeah. And I mean, like, I can only really speak from a female perspective, you know, but, you know, women are supposed to be really sort of ornamental, you know, and we've sort of been reduced to this sort of thing where we're just people to be looked at, you know, and our entire worth is sewn up in what we look like and how thin we can be, you know. I mean, if I was to say I'm a size 10, it means something very different to I'm a size 16, and that's just the sorry world we live in right now. And I mean, the piece I wrote in the Irish Times was about getting into a size 14 dress in Topshop and finding it quite hard to get back out of it. And, you know, I mean, the fact is there are women out there that will just, you know, no matter what, they will try and get into that smaller size dress because it's a psychological thing. You know, it has nothing to do with the garment or the sizing or anything like that. That's why vanity sizing is such a big thing at the moment. You know, there's a lot of clothes companies that actually make bigger clothes in smaller sizes so that customers feel better about being a size 12 and being able to fit into a size 12. But again, you're only really kidding yourself, you know. So
suppose there's a whole infatuation with this perfect beach body. There's a bit of pressure on women.
It really does. I mean, like, you know, this has been going on for years and years and years, you know, and obviously celebrity culture has trickled down into, and the media, it's trickled down into everyday thought. I mean, I've forgotten, you know, I've lost count of the amount of celebrity magazines I've opened up, and there's some celebrity who's, you know, despairing because they've shot up to 10 stone, you know. I mean, 10 stone is actually, in a sane world, it's quite a healthy weight for a woman, you know, but, you know, they fret and they freak out, and it's only afterwards when they kind of tell you that there's been a sort of a mental breakdown or some kind of, you know, eating their worries away. And the media are incredibly sneaky and insidious with all of this stuff. If you look at any tabloid newspaper, celebrity magazine, it's a lot of, you know, such and such a celebrity flaunts her curves, and, you know, we've lost count of the amount of times we've heard about Kim Kardashian in waist training or, you know, doing cleanses and all this kind of stuff. And unfortunately, you know, young women are really susceptible, and they take this stuff hook, line and sinker without realizing there's a much bigger picture there, and they start doing the same thing. You know, I know a lot of young women who are just, I don't think they've ever not been on a diet, to be honest.
Well, that's it. There's so many fad diets as well, and everybody seems to be dieting. But then you mentioned 10 stone there. Surely that is a healthy weight for a woman.
It's a hugely healthy weight, and gosh, I wish I was 10 stone. But, you know, in the sort of topsy-turvy world of celebrity, you know, like, they have to be very, very small, you know, because ultimately, you know, the way the media tells it, you know, being thin, you're in control of your life and you're in control of what you put in your mouth and you're on top of things. But if you're, you know, a size 14 or a size 16, you know, the way the media tells it, not me, you know, there is a sort of an insinuation that you really have gone off the rails and, you know, you're comfort eating and you're just not doing things right. But I mean, what I wrote in my Irish Times article is I'm a size 14. Like 6 months ago, I was in the gym five times a week, you know, for a good hour at a time. I was able to scoot up seven flights of steps without, you know, even losing breath, whereas my much smaller friends would be on the third step kind of freaking out, you know. But so, I mean, it really is an unfair and unjust and untrue system, you know. I mean, you can be size 14 and be incredibly happy, be incredibly healthy and actually be in proportion. There's such a thing as a happy size, you know, and I think a lot of women need to understand that, you know, you can be your happy size. You can be a size 14. Don't ruin your life by trying to get down to a size 10 if that's not your natural size and that's not how your natural metabolism works. You know, be happy with what you are. Be happy with the way you are naturally and really work on your head and get comfortable with that.
And as long as you're healthy and fit, that's all that really matters, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, you know, and I do know a lot of women, you know, who are, and especially, you know, when you get up to your 30s and 40s, you know, women who are a larger dress size, we'll say, but they're hugely active and they look after themselves. And, you know, I mean, I think it's all about moderation, you know, and I mean, I funnily enough, I interviewed a woman called Danielle Hayes, who is a size 14, but she's a heavyweight lifter. And this feeds into a new sort of trend that sort of trumped size zero. It's the Fitspo trend, where you'll see on Instagram loads and loads of people putting up gym pictures after their workouts, looking incredible. But the new thing now is strong, not skinny. So if you're able to bench and lift weights and stuff like that, you know, this is now the new bodily ideal. I mean, the only problem with that is that you're swapping out one body ideal for another, you know, and, you know, it sort of means that a lot of people just aren't accepting themselves the way they are, which is the huge problem, you know. And I think there should be sort of, you know, a system whereby you look at yourself and go, right, I'm doing my best to kind of be healthy and be active and look after myself. I may be whatever size, but that's fine. And whether you're a size 6 and can't put on weight, or you're a size 16 and can't lose weight, or you've got a lot of muscle mass, you know, you should be, you know, it's just such a shame that women aren't happy in themselves in that way.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting subject, Tanya, and I'm sure a lot of people have an opinion on it who are listening in. Thanks for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome back to the show. Now, the Minister for Jobs, Enterprise and Innovation, Richard Bruton, officially launched Design Island, a new app aimed at helping tourists as well as Irish people discover and experience the best of Irish design this week. The app was produced by Irish Design 2015 in collaboration with IBM, and Design Island is available to download from the App Store. Now, Design Island, there's only one hostel in Ireland which is on this app, and it's Errigal Hostel here in County Donegal. Anne Mooney from Errigal Hostel now joins us on the line. Anne, good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
What does it mean to be on this app? The only hostel in Ireland?
The only hostel in Ireland. We're very privileged. And we're just delighted, absolutely delighted to be part of this this Irish Design collaboration. And it's wonderful, it's wonderful.
It's quite a big deal then to get on this.
It is quite a big deal because, you know, it's part of the Irish government's action plan for jobs. And, you know, there's a whole sort of long-term plan involved in it to encourage SMEs to undertake design when they are developing or redeveloping their businesses, you know. So it's great. It's a great coup for An Oige, who are the company behind Errigal Hostel.
Any idea why Errigal Hostel is the only one in Ireland, I suppose? Where it's situated, it explains itself. It's self-explanatory,
well,
isn't it?
It does help that we have a lovely rock feature in our back garden, being Errigal Mountain. And I think the design itself is quite sympathetic to its location. You know, the roof line is quite in keeping with the building that was here beforehand. We use stone, which is native to the area. And it's a contemporary, airy design, you know.
And I suppose where Errigal Hostel is, it's at the foot of Errigal, then you've done Dunluce Chapel, Dunluce Lock and Poison Glen, just a stone's throw away. I don't think there's a hostel better situated in the country anyway.
I would agree with you. I'm sure there might be others who would contend that, but there are some beautiful locations, of course, all over Ireland, but we feel that we're pretty lucky with the location we have here.
And suppose yous are busy, I take it anyway, at this time of year.
Absolutely. There isn't a bed to be had now till the end of August here.
And I was going to say this app could make yous busier, but if yous don't have a bed left, it doesn't really matter.
We don't have a bed left. I mean, the app is great for tourists coming into Ireland because it has, I think, 5 categories on it. And it is aimed at tourists coming into the place. And it's places to stay, to eat and drink, what's to see, where to shop, and what events. So that they are the 5 categories, and then they highlight a couple of things, you know. But so we are under the stay category, obviously.
And the app, it's available on the App Store. It's easy enough for people to download.
It is. It is, even in Dunluce with not such a great broadband connection. You can download it, and it then asks permission to track your location so as it can serve you better, you know, so as it can tell you where the nearest attractions would be.
Well, Anne, it's a great app for tourism, and it's a great app for the Dunluce Hostel, and hopefully it'll bring more people to Donegal.
I hope so. And so as they can experience all the other lovely things we have to offer up here, Barry.
Anne, thanks for joining us on the show.
Take care. Thank you, Barry. Me.
Anne Mooney from the Errigal Hostel there. That app, Design Island, you can get it on the App Store. I was looking at it last night. There's plenty of places to visit around the country, obviously, but it's great to have the Dunluce Hostel on it. We're going to take a song now. Mondy was to come into the studio, but he's just contacted us to tell us he's running late. So we'll take a song. He might get in for the last few minutes, but it's looking unlikely.
I'm
Coming to an end of an hour show on Saturday, we're going to announce the competition winner. The competition today was courtesy of our Errigal Arts Festival, which we were giving you the chance to win a family room overnight to stay on the 22nd of July in the Station House Hotel in Letterkenny, and also four tickets to the Elves and the Shoemaker on the 22nd of July in the Angrenan Theatre in Letterkenny. The question was, in the fairy tale Cinderella, how many ugly sisters did she have? Two or four? The answer was, of course, two. And the winner is Shane Foley from 45 Glenfield Manor in Strabane. So Shane Foley gets himself a night stay in the Station House Hotel and the four tickets to that gig in the Errigal Arts Festival. So well done, Shane. That's all we have time for on today's show. Monday was to come into the studio, but he hasn't showed up. He must have been running late. He is doing a gig in Kildare tonight. Hopefully he turns up for that. We're going to take a break. Coming up next, Catherine with the news.